Welcome to another episode of Nashville Anthems, dissecting 80s and 90s country music. And many thanks to the Del Lane Band for playing us in this episode. On this podcast, we drastically overreact to 80s and 90s country music in order to see clearly what exactly it is that makes this era and genre particularly work. Through confronting, with or without our bathrobes on, the songs played on satellite radio's 80s and 90s country station, one at a time. Today, we've taken sufficient leave of our senses to take shots at Mark Chestnut's fun little 1992 hit, Bubba Shot the Jukebox. So, if you haven't already, why don't you run out to your truck, dust off the CD, and give Bubba Shot the Jukebox a close listen or two. And now, let's get into it. First off, as always, we want to give credit where credit is due, courtesy of my memory and my friends and yours, Wikipedia and Billboard. Mark Chestnut, that's C-H-E-S-N-U-T-T, and yes, that's his real name. Mark Chestnut released Bubba Shot the Jukebox in September of 1992 as the third single from his third studio album, but the second one since he hit it big, Long Necks and Short Stories. You know, I believe that was the first CD I ever owned. Isn't that funny? I asked for a CD player for Christmas that year, I remember that, and I keyed in on Long Necks and Short Stories, probably in part because of Bubba Shot the Jukebox, and definitely because of its predecessor, the second single from that album, I'll Think of Something. I still love that song, actually. But anyway, between those couple of singles and others you'll remember, like Old Flames Have New Names, Brother Jukebox, It Sure Is Monday, and Too Cold at Home, Mark Chestnut was a bona fide honky-tonk hitmaker of early 90s country, and beyond for that matter. So it's great to be getting to him, finally. So chart-wise, Bubba Shot the Jukebox peaked at number 4 in a very crowded 1992. So we can all be thankful I didn't get a chance to make the number 1 with a bullet joke in this episode. But do you want to know what held it out of being number 1 with a bullet? I couldn't resist. Of course you do. Ahead of Bubba Shot the Jukebox on November 14th, 1992 were... At number 3, Pam Tillis with a personal favorite, Shake the Sugar Tree. Then some quintessential Lori Morgan at number 2 with Watch Me. And finally, number 1 was... Anybody want to guess? A song we've mentioned before in this context because it sat at number 1 for a while. It was Wynonna, No One Else on Earth. See what I mean about 1992? Okay, production credit on Bubba Shot the Jukebox goes to a name we've seen before, MCA's Mark Wright. And the solitary songwriter involved was a legend, the late, great Dennis Lindy. He's worth Googling if you want to know more, but just some highlights. Dennis Lindy wrote Elvis Presley's 70s hit, Burning Love, and on the countryside, he wrote several songs that we'll probably get to in Nashville Anthems eventually, including the Dixie Chicks' Goodbye Earl, remember that one? An aforementioned Chestnut hit, It Sure Is Monday, and one of my personal all-time favorite songs, certainly top five country for me, Joe Diffie's John Deere Green. Love that song. But you're seeing a pattern, right? At least in the country selections. Each of those songs has something either funny or at least slightly tongue-in-cheek about them. Even Goodbye Earl, actually especially Goodbye Earl, takes a very serious subject and gives it this really interesting dark humor treatment. And John Deere Green is just lighthearted and sweet. And It Sure Is Monday even has kind of a lightly comedic take on the weekday grind. So we'd be justifiable in expecting something ironic, likely tongue-in-cheek, and maybe even darkly humorous in Bubba Shot the Jukebox. And that's just what we get. Now, it's borderline over the top, but I argue it manages to stay just this side of too much, an overall ideal we've run into before. Such that Bubba Shot the Jukebox is a unique and enjoyable early 90s honky-tonker that remains in our collective memories today, even as some of its contemporaries may have fallen by the wayside. So, let's tackle this song from that angle. Let's talk about the dark humor in Bubba Shot the Jukebox. Let's start with suspense. One of the primary ways that Bubba Shot the Jukebox maintains and builds suspense is through a steady stream of key changes. The clearest of these is the modulations up a half step, basically on each verse. Song starts in the key of G, and I'm going to hold off on saying major or minor for now. Let's just call it G for the intro, the first verse, and the first chorus. Then it rises a half step to A flat for the second verse and second chorus, with the modulation coming in the middle of the turnaround. Last night. And In between the second chorus and third verse, it happens again, modulating, of course, to the key of A. Last night, when the sheriff arrived. And it stays in A for a while. The third verse and a chorus are in A, as expected, plus the bridge and the subsequent instrumental break. Then I guess you'd call it a tag at the end. Notice the twist at the very end, though. Ever caught this before? There's actually yet another modulation halfway through the outro, just like the turnarounds, now up to B-flat. And like Elvira before it, the song quickly ends after that final half-step modulation, such that we're left anticipating something that never quite pays off. And somewhere Mark Chestnut is saying, you better believe it ended there. Could you sing another verse that high? But you get the feel, right? The song has a constant rising action, a ratcheting up of intensity, a build-up that never really resolves. It's basically pure suspense, largely because of these relentless key changes up the ladder, and especially because of that last one, that staircase to nowhere that Dennis Lindy, Mark Wright, and Mark Chestnut definitely didn't have to put in there. Such that it's the sort of nice touch that helps give a song like this its particular unique atmosphere. And while we're on the subject of key changes, let me note the tonal contrast between the verses and the choruses in Bubba Shot the Jukebox. It's quite similar to both Billy the Kid and Rodeo in this. There is arguably at least the suggestion of a key change between minor and major between each verse and chorus. And all at once he jumped to his feet, just like somebody kicked him. A suggestion, mind you, but more on that in a moment. We also have in this song, and it's again similar to the brooding western walk in Billy the Kid, steady, deep, booming quarter notes on the bass guitar and bass drum, especially in the verses. He hung his head until the cops showed up. He dragged him right out of margins. They told him, don't you play. These suggest something looming. They prick your ears in calm before the storm anticipation of something coming that is at least going to be unpleasant. And finally, I want to note the uneven rhythm in Bubba Shot the Jukebox. We see this in the form of 2-4 measures if you're feeling the song in 4-4, or 1-2 measures, if you will, if you're feeling it in cut time. They're like little stutter steps, momentary hesitations in the progression of the rhythm, slight pauses that build that overall anticipatory sense of suspense. A couple of examples. Went to his truck and got a 45. Bubba, 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Bubba. There the 2-4 measure leads into the most dramatic revelation in the song, right? Up until then, Bubba's having a rough time, but there's kind of no big deal, no imminent danger or anything like that. So what is Bubba going out to his truck to get? A handkerchief? Some cash for another round? Maybe some loose change so he can select something less agonizing on the jukebox? Yeah, not exactly. All right, here's another example. This one leads into the bridge. You get the familiar closing line of the chorus, but then this very in-your-face, minor-tuned string lick invades the rhythm to transition the song to any song's most suspenseful area, if it has one. It's bridge. Bubba shot the jukebox last night. But he could not. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. But he could not. So, in this case, an unexpected 2-4 measure grabs our attention such that if we had started to slouch, we sit back up, maybe scoot to the edge of our seats a little and ask, what's about to happen? So those are some of the suspenseful elements in Bubba Shot the Jukebox, some of the dark and the dark humor of this song. But what about the humor? How does this song find its particular balance that walks the line between scary and funny? We've already hinted at some of this with the minor-ish verses and the major-ish choruses, because that's part of how Bubba Shot the Jukebox walks the dark humor line, by playing with blues. Now, at the risk of sounding like a skipping 1992 CD, we got to dive into the idea of blues tonality yet again, which, at this point, it's abundantly clear that part of the secret sauce this podcast wants to reverse engineer is 80s and 90s country music's appropriation of blues, either in form, in tone, or in both. Set the blues in the rural white South and surround it with honky-tonk instrumentation, and it seems you're 80% of the way there to understanding 80s and 90s country music. You certainly are for this song, anyway, and we'll get to the rural side of that in a moment. But for now, let's focus on how playing with the blues contributes to the darkly humorous nature of Bubba Shot the Jukebox. Let's dig into this minor-major thing. So the overall idea here is, much like other bluesy songs we've covered, especially Rodeo and Billy the Kid, this song kind of walks the line between minor and major, refusing to commit to one or the other. And in particular, the weight of evidence, if you want to think of it that way, shifts depending on what section of the song you're in. Here's how I'm hearing it, and you may hear it differently, and that's okay, because really the overall point isn't whether this or that section is major or minor, but the fact that there is ambiguity. And in this case, shifting ambiguity. So, on one extreme end, I'd say the intro, turnarounds, and outro are all strongly minor keyed. So here, just to normalize things, we'll talk in the key the song starts in, that of G. So in that key, the lick that essentially forms the intro and turnarounds is G, B-flat, G, D, F, G, which are the notes of a G minor 7th chord. And the outro takes the last little bit down instead of back up, but same idea. On the other end of the tonal spectrum, the chorus of Bubba Shot the Jukebox is clearly major with blues tonality. Listen to the steel guitar going into the chorus, how it emphasizes the major third. The complete opposite of what the vocals and instruments had been doing up until then. Kicked him, Bubba Shot the Jukebox. So the lead-in is kind of the signal to us that, much like in Billy the Kid, by the way, we've kind of zoomed temporarily out of the specific, slightly scary story and are now providing some context that provides a retrospective point of view that may help us rest a little easier as the listener here. But now, the interesting part is the verse, because it's not major and it's not minor, but rather something squarely in between. This is an idea, again, we went into in some depth in both the Rodeo and Billy the Kid episodes, so I don't want to belabor it too much here, but the idea is simply that the song kind of withholds thirds of chords from us, leaving us guessing what they would sound like if they were there. And that's especially true in the verses. You get lots of open fifths, lots of octaves, and there's inherent mystery in all that. Presentation was a tense one. He shook his head and said, "Bubba boy, you was always a dense one." Again, go back especially to Rodeo to hear all that unpacked. But here the exception is the vocal melody, which is a significant departure from both Rodeo and Billy the Kid, because Chestnut's melody pounds, and I mean pounds, the minor third in this song. Actually very similar to what the lead guitar did on Killin' Time, in the same key no less, at least at the beginning of Bubba Shot the Jukebox. Actually, this is something we saw vocally on Ain't Going Down Till the Sun Comes Up as well. Actually, again in the same key. Again, here we're in the key of G. So what is Chestnut's first note that he sings? Is it a very principled G? Maybe a slightly more laid-back D? Certainly not a bright B natural, right? No, it's none of those. It's in fact the very dark B-flat, the minor third of G, the minorest and bluest of chord degrees. And just listen to some of this melody. Listen to how often you hear this note that's a B-flat in Chestnut's melody. We were all down at Marge's bar, telling stories if we had one. Someone fired the old jukebox up. The song, it sure was a sad one. And whereas in other bluesy songs that we've looked at, the vocal melody has played with that third chord degree, making it sometimes minor, sometimes major, and often something in between, actually Chestnut leaves no doubt. He's singing minor thirds here, pure and simple. The rest of the arrangement, largely, at least when the instruments are in the background, kind of keeps us guessing, with again octaves and open fifths, but Chestnut does not. And actually that vocal idea carries into the more major toned chorus as well. But this is a super interesting thing, because this song leans a little more into the dark side of the tension between dark and light than a typical bluesy country song might. So it's not the thunder rolls, right? It's not pure darkness. But neither is it Billy the Kid's slight suggestion of darkness wrapped in a comfortable shawl of whimsy. Bubba Shot the Jukebox is setting a situation that is both comically absurd and deathly serious, if it really happened, in a sweet and sour sauce that seems to have been fine-tuned to accentuate that very tension. So production-wise, too, Bubba Shot the Jukebox is using this, like, industrial production. You know, the whole song really uses it, but to me, you feel it most in the verse. It's similar to what we talked about in Third Rock from the Sun, actually, sounding not quite handmade. There's lots of compression and prominent, kind of lifeless high pitches in this crowded mix. You was always a dense one, a reckless discharge of a gun. That's what the officers are claiming. Bubba hollered at a reckless hell. I hit just where I was aiming. Bubba shot. And all this contributes to the heaviness of Bubba Shot the Jukebox. But in Third Rock from the Sun, heavy was kind of all there was. Here, the heaviness is a bit over the top. And that, again, contributes to the contrast between that heaviness and some of the lighter-hearted elements of the song, to keep the whole thing living in this tension between Buck Owens and 90s Aerosmith. It's part of what makes Bubba a hero in this song, right? Rather than a villain or a loser. Bubba versus the machine, or something like that. But the song's tone is tongue-in-cheek enough to suggest that tension without taking it seriously. It's a subtle point, but a true distinguishing mark between the music this podcast examines and some of the popular country that came after it. In Bro Country, you're hearing what happens when rural people with a sense of humor move to the suburbs and lose it. And you know, we haven't gotten into Mark Chestnut's delivery either, because how does he sing those relentless minor thirds? With a whine that would make George Jones proud. I mean, Chestnut is known for this. Like we mentioned with Joe Diffie, while George Jones' influence was there for basically every male singer of this era, there are a handful of guys for whom that influence probably rises to the level of imitation. Not that there's anything wrong with that. And Mark Chestnut is one of those guys. He could not tell right from wrong through the teardrops in his eyes. But his nasally whine is just as perfect for the minor thirds on Bubba Shot the Jukebox as Clint Black's earthy grit was for them on Killin' Time. Those are two songs with similar tones in terms of how they're pitched, but very different tones in terms of their points of view. Killin' Time wasn't funny. It wasn't really dark either. It was just doing its own relatable human thing. So Clint Black's everyman grit hit the spot on that one. But Bubba Shot the Jukebox is both dark and tongue-in-cheek. So Chestnut doesn't sing with grit or with adventurous attitude like Garth Brooks' minor thirds on Ain't Going Down Till the Sun Comes Up. No, he sings the dark pitches with like this reaching, downtrodden whine that hits the sweet spot tonally, especially when he narrates the words of the hero shooter himself. It feels like a hard luck man who is finally standing up for himself. Bubba hollered at a reckless hell. I hit just where I was aiming. Bubba shot. But with a touch of tongue-in-cheek absurdity because of who, or I guess what, the bully being confronted in this song actually is. Let's talk about that. Let's get into the super unique story of Bubba Shot the Jukebox. Let's first be explicit about exactly why this on-the-level absurd story is also dark. First off, the obvious. We have a guy bringing a loaded firearm into a bar and opening fire. Not exactly a knee slapper there, right? I'm willing to give the song a pass in 1992 that it may not get for such a thing now. Probably this song just couldn't happen today, right or wrong, but in 1992 it could and it did, and I don't see anything productive in applying today's standards to it. But even for the time, though it may not have been a taboo subject matter, in the context of this tension we've been talking about between dark and light, the danger inherent in the situation at the heart of this song is certainly on the dark side of that balance. The other thing I want to mention, and again, let's acknowledge and lament if you want, that 1992 was a different time, such that as a culture, we were still making light of things that we don't really make light of as much today. In this case, it's mental health. The song even says it, Bubba ain't never been accused of being what? Mentally stable. And, you know, seeing this song through these angles with the benefit of many years of hindsight, I have to say it's making me uncomfortable, and maybe it is you too. And that feeling is worth thinking through and working through, but really outside the scope of this podcast. Instead, we're going to take this song in its own terms. This is not a song that's inviting us to ask questions, for example, about what would have happened to this mentally unstable person if the sheriff had arrived before he had laid his Colt on the table. Instead, it's inviting us to feel some of the danger, suspense, and tension while acknowledging that no one was hurt and chuckling at the absurdity of it all. So let's get into some of that. The dark comedy situation here is indisputably dark, but what about the comedy? Well, part of it is certainly in the white rural setting, giving it a kind of aw shucks simpleton vibe a la Mayberry. For example, you have a truck with a gun in it in the parking lot. And in case that sounds a little too on the nose for your taste, let me assure you that keeping a gun in one's truck in a parking lot was and is normal behavior for where I'm from. My high school's parking lot was full of them, in fact. It's almost expected in some situations, actually. So if nothing else, it's truly a relatable situation for many people. Another rural hallmark here is the familiarity that permeates the song. The narrator, or maybe better to call him the storyteller, assumes his audience knows these people and this place. In other words, the place and the people are named in the song, but are not introduced. The song starts off, "We were all down at Margie's bar." So who's we and where is Margie's bar? For that matter, what jukebox? And who is Bubba? The song assumes we know all that, and that's the sort of thing you assume in a small town. Miranda Lambert was right about that. There's also this absurd picture of a bathrobed sheriff who, note, just as we're supposed to, clearly knows Bubba by name, and from the way he addresses him, expects Bubba to know him. And of course, the very name Bubba is a common rural nickname. And notice that it's a sheriff who shows up, by the way, especially one that everyone evidently knows well. And that suggests that we're in a sparsely inhabited, unincorporated area of the county. A rural area, in other words. So the sheriff comes in and takes charge, but he uses some unnecessary bad grammar, right? Hinting again at lower class rurality. Notice he says, "You was always a dense one," when "you were always a dense one" fits the syllables and everything just fine. But again, this ain't Joe Friday. This is Andy Griffith. Notice, too, those rhyming words, tense and dense. A tense confrontation in which the authority figure calls the people's hero dense. So there's that dark and humorous contrast, right? And all this is kind of played for laughs. And if you're offended by what I'm saying about rural people, know that I am myself a rural southern white boy. And as they say, I can say stuff about folks like that because I are one. Well, the final comedic element that I want to note in this story is the idea of a tall tale. I'm picking up on a hint of humorous uncertainty about this story from the way it's told. So the song is told as a tall tale from one of the witnesses, right? That's hinted at by the remark at the beginning of the song about the folks at the bar telling stories if we had one. Also, just the overall fatalistic detachment of this storyteller. So those tall tale hints bring the always fun idea of the unreliable narrator into the picture. Because baked into the tall tale genre is the idea of exaggeration, often for comedic effect. Or it's not that the exaggeration is for comedic effect within the story, but that the fact of expected and unacknowledged exaggeration is itself comedic. But again, there's tension. It's only suggested that this is a tall tale. On the other side of the ledger, we have verifiable facts at play here, publicly available legal records, other witnesses, and a defined time setting. Now, it was only last night, and that sounds less humorously exaggerated than eminently dangerous. So is Bubba still in jail? Does he still have his Colt 45? Do other bars in town have jukeboxes with sad country songs? You know, someone once wisely said they ought to put warning labels on those. But until that happens, maybe watch what you queue up. Don't rock the jukebox, but maybe lay off "He Stopped Loving Her Today" too. After all, a man can only take so much. Evidently. So that's what at least yours truly is hearing of Bubba Shot the Jukebox, a unique and fun little song that basks in the tension between dark and light and makes no apology for doing so. So, with that said, let's tape off this crime scene and find out what song we'll be looking at on the next episode of Nashville Anthems. To that end, I'm going to pull up Satellite Radio's 80s and 90s country station right now and see what's playing. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, we finally have Randy Travis. It's a great song. It's "On the Other Hand." I look forward to getting to that one with you in 2 weeks. In the meantime, look up Nashville Anthems on Instagram or Facebook. And don't forget to tell a friend about us. Thanks so much for listening. Bye now. I gotta go. I gotta get something out of the car.